Well, hello, 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 friends. Fancy meeting you here. Welcome to Candid with Carrie. I'm your host, Carrie Lippert-Gillespie. I am so jazzed that you pressed play on this episode and you are spending time with me today. I hope that your week is off to a really great start. Mine sure is. I love, love, love Mondays. I am like that weird person who just gets so jazzed about a new week, and I love new beginnings, and the like mother of all new beginnings is coming up because the year is ending. So I am like journaling all my feelings about the year wrapping up. I am goal planning, vision board planning, like getting down to the core of what I want to do in the next year, looking back on this past year and then moving forward. And that kind of stuff gets me so riled, you guys. Like, I love it so much. Is that weird? I don't know. Maybe that's weird of me that like a good journal sesh just really gets my heart racing. I'm not sure. I'm not here to fight it, y'all. Just do what you got to do. Let your freak flag fly. And that's definitely something that I've been doing and loving a lot lately. This past weekend, I spent like my entire weekend doing animal related causes. You guys know I'm a huge animal welfare advocate, and I spent a lot of time helping out at the local humane societies here in Kansas City. And then when I go back home to Wisconsin, and this weekend was just busy. There was a TNR clinic, trap neuter release clinic for community cats on Saturday morning. So I woke up early to help transport for that. Came home, took a nap, kind of did some stuff there. And then in the evening, I got ready and went back out. The Humane Society that I volunteer for had a fundraiser at the local Culver's that they were raising money for. And we had adoptable dogs at like each Culver's location in Missouri, you know, Missouri Culver's in Kansas City. And it was really fun, but we got to hang out with one of the adoptable dogs that is one of my favorites and just encourage people to donate and get the dogs out, get them some, you know, FaceTime with hopefully potential adopters. We're really trying to get as many dogs as possible home for the holidays, because as much as they get so much love in the shelter and they are so adored, it just doesn't compare to having your own home and your own person to come home to. So it's really incredible. That was just Saturday, you guys. And then every Sunday, I go to HSGKC, the Humane Society of Greater Kansas City, and I walk dogs every Sunday morning. And I walked like 6 dogs this time. Normally I get to like 3 or 4. It depends on how much time I have to give, but the Packers didn't play until the evening. So I just kept walking dogs. And you know, they all have varying levels of what they're up to. You know, some of them are not about the exercise. You know, they get out there, they do their thing, and they want to come back. And there were a couple specifically that have all the energy, and I ran with them pretty much their entire quote unquote walk. Like, they just had a lot of energy. I'll run with them. It was a beautiful day. So we ran for like half of it. And so it was like an exercise and a half. And I just get to spend time loving on these wonderful puppers, you guys. It fills my heart so much. I come home from it and I'm exhausted. Like, I'm so tired. I usually have something to eat and take a nap. But, you know, when I get past all that, I realize how full my heart is because animals and animal welfare and spending time with these animals and helping them to find their forever homes really fills me up in such a way that I cannot even put into words. So I feel so fortunate that I have something, that I've found something that I'm passionate about and that lights me up so much. And yeah, it's just a wonderful thing. I don't know, whatever your thing is, maybe it's like children's literacy, or I'm not sure, or giving blood, or anything like that, like something that just really lights you up. Like, just go out there and do it. Like, get involved, because there are causes all across the world that need help. And you can't do anything sitting on the sidelines. So this is like me telling you, whatever your thing is, it doesn't have to be animals. It can be whatever. Like, just get out there and make a difference. Go be big brothers, big sisters. They always need people who are going to be good role models for kids. Go, you know, help out at a food clinic or something like that, or a homeless shelter, whatever you can do. Like, just do it. We're here to serve people and to make a difference in whatever that is. And whatever thing you're drawn to, like, we need you out there doing it. So just go do it. For me, it is animals and animal welfare and animal advocacy. And as much time as I put into it, I get so much back in return spending time with these dogs that have been through so much. Some of these dogs have just been through the ringer, and the way that they still approach life, so happy, so loving, so just playful and ready for the world and ready to trust and love again, is absolutely incredible. And they have taught me so much, and it is such a wonderful thing. You guys, I need to take a break. I'm gonna go cry, okay? Just be right back. All right, now that we have my public service announcement for the week out of the way, let's get into some rants and raves for the week. I teased to you guys a couple weeks ago that I was thinking of dipping my toes into watching Entourage because I had never seen Entourage. I know Entourage as like a cultural, you know, thing. You know, I know the premise, Vincent Chase, his buddies, Hollywood, he's an actor, blah, 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 Ari Gold. Like, I knew the premise of it, but I had even seen episodes, like random episodes here and there, but I had never sat down and watched it all start to finish. And for some reason, I was like, I'm going to watch Entourage. Like, I think this is a show that I can have on and like half watch and kind of be in tune. And I want to see what it's all about. So I did start watching Entourage. It's on HBO Max. And I have to say, it's definitely entertaining and I am like really enjoying it. But it is also just such a snapshot in time, honestly, because when this movie first, or this movie, when this show first came out, it was like they were pulling everything from popularity at the time. So what I mean when I say it is just a slice of like the culture, like the fashion that all the girls are wearing and like even like all the girls they have on this show, like they all have the same chunky blonde highlights. Do you guys remember those? Like, oh my gosh, chunky blonde highlights. Like they all have super stick straight hair. You know, when we were all just straightening our hairs to oblivion, you know, with our flat irons all day, every day, they all like low rise jeans, like these shimmery tops. Like it's just, oh my gosh. I watched this show in the first couple of seasons and I am just like, wow, 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 wow. Get Marty McFly and Doc because we are back to the future, y'all. We are back in the olden days and this is crazy. The other thing that really proves that it is just like such a cultural timestamp of like where we were is that it is meant to like mimic real life. So Vincent Chase, which is Adrian Grenier's, you know, character, is like the hottest actor, up and coming actor in Hollywood. And so what they do is they have guest cameos in pretty much every episode, maybe not every episode, but like every other episode. Very often they have guest cameos of like real life, really famous actresses. So like, for example, in season one, Jessica Alba was in the episode like playing herself. Like she's just playing Jessica Alba and she's like trying to do a movie with Vinny Chase. And then they had Scarlett Johansson and then they had like Jamie Presley and like all these different actresses. And you could just tell that, you know, at the time that this was made, they were like the hot actresses. Like Jessica Alba like isn't even really acting anymore. She's off, you know, building like $1 billion, like, you know, cruelty free, clean makeup companies, you know, so she's not even like acting anymore. But back when this show was out, yeah, she was like a hot actress on the scene. And I mean, ScarJo is still the hottest thing, but I mean, it is just funny to watch and to see how much of like the zeitgeist they were capturing in that moment. And it really takes me back to like yesteryear. It has been absolutely incredible. I watched the whole first season. They're only 30-minute episodes, so don't judge me too much there. And I kind of have them on while I'm working, when I'm doing random like tasks on my computer. It's really easy to like keep one eye on it and then one eye on my computer screen. So I've been able to whip through them pretty quickly, but it has been a treat and a half. I do not regret starting it. In fact, I've really, really enjoyed it. The other thing I spent some time watching this weekend was the final race of the F1, you know, series of the year. And oh my gosh, it was quite telling. You guys know I became obsessed with F1 when I watched Formula One Drive to Survive. And I was just so entrenched in this little subculture of Formula One. And I'm like hooked. And this year was unprecedented because two people were going in to the final race tied for the world championship. Like you have to score a certain amount of points and the person with the point, like the most amount of points, is crowned the national champion or the world champion, I should say. And two of the top rate like drivers who had been like neck and neck all year had the exact same amount of points. So it really was down to this one race. A lot of times that doesn't happen. But it was a dead tie between Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton, and it was like balls to the walls till the end. And the person I wanted to win did not win. I'm a big Lewis Hamilton fan. I really wanted him to win. Max Verstappen with Red Bull ended up winning over something pretty controversial. I won't get into it too much, but it was just really intense and really rocked like the sports F1 racing world in general. That was on Saturday or Sunday. I can't remember now. I think maybe it was Sunday, but that was intense. And it just makes me really excited to watch the new season of Formula One Drive to Survive when it finally comes out. I cannot wait. Netflix, get on it, get editing, give me the goods. We have to see it. I am so excited to watch it all play out. Let's move it right along into our trending topics of the week because we have got some ground to cover. And I want to say that I think the theme of this week's trending topics is a lot about justice being served. So let's jump right in because we need to bring the gavel down on some of these things. Story number one, actor Jesse Smollett is found guilty of falsely reporting a hate crime against himself in 2019. A Chicago jury reached guilty verdicts on Thursday on 5 of 6 charges against Empire actor Jesse Smollett, who was accused of falsely reporting that he was the victim of a disturbing hate-fueled beating. The panel, which deliberated since Wednesday afternoon, weighed 6 counts of felony disorderly conduct against Smollett for telling the police that he was brutally assaulted at 2:45 a.m. on January 19, 2019 in Chicago's Streeterville neighborhood. The offenses are Class 4 felonies and could be punishable by up to 3 years behind bars. The special prosecutor selected to lead the case said, quote, "For the last 3 weeks, these 26 Chicago officers spent 3,000 hours of time, costing the city well over $100,000 for a fake crime that never occurred. And by the way, a fake crime that denigrates what a real hate crime is and to use these meanings and symbols that are so important in our society. It's clear why the police would take it so seriously," end quote. Smollett's defense attorney says that they will appeal, calling his client, quote, "an innocent man." Smollett claimed that 2 men punched him, kicked him, and used racist and homophobic slurs, threw chemicals in his face, wrapped a rope around his neck, and even yelled out a slogan in support of then-President Donald Trump. It is so crazy to me to, like, look back and notice that this was in 2019. I remember when this story came out. And again, like, I remember when it happened, and it blows my mind that it has been that long. The justice system, you know, has a tendency not to be swift at times. And there is always different loopholes and things going on that take things at time a while to actually come to court. So it's crazy that it is almost 2022. And we are now getting a verdict on this. He will still have to be sentenced. So I mean, it's not even done. Like, it's just, it takes a while sometimes to get this stuff done. In terms of this case, I covered this before on a previous episode, and I remember when it happened and it was sad and terrible. And then shortly after, he went on Good Morning America to tell his side of the story. He did a really, you know, emotional interview with Robin Roberts telling his story. But it was strange to me, and I said this in the previous episode where we covered this, it was strange to me that he was wanting to do that interview. I think it was like a week or two after this happened. I mean, I understand wanting to tell your story when you've just been through something horrible, but I mean, 2 weeks, a week or two after something this heinous happens to you, you're ready to go on national television and speak your piece? Like, I don't know. It just seemed weird and strange. And then shortly after, we found out that there was a good chance that this was a lie. Someone came forward and said that I, you know, was paid by Jesse Smollett to do this. And a lot of people were saying that he did this to raise his, you know, stock in the acting world, and that this would bring publicity and would raise his, you know, stock in whatever project he was doing. He starred on Empire. That was probably the role he was most known for. But I don't know. Shortly after, he, of course, got written off of Empire, and he has not, of course, had work since. And it's probably going to struggle to get work moving forward. It seems that the evidence against him is pretty convincing. I don't know what else to say other than that. It sounds like this was something he made up. You never know. I think he's still riding the fact that he's innocent, because otherwise he looks like a total turd and a total, like, just, I don't know, waste of space. Because who makes something like this up? Who does something like that? Like, to increase their value in the market? Like, go take acting classes, bro. Like, don't stage a hate crime. Like, go get better at your craft, and maybe that will up your value in the market. Like, what the prosecutor said is completely right. Like, this is such, like, a slap against anyone who's ever experienced this kind of hate on a serious level. And it's such a slap in their face. And it makes me mad. It just makes me mad. And like I said, the evidence against him is pretty damning. Like, it's pretty obvious from what the evidence was shared that this is something that he staged. I think he's still riding that he's innocent, because otherwise he just looks stupid and silly. And what else are you going to do but say I'm innocent? I'm not sure. He is going to appeal this, obviously. They have said that. They are riding for the fact that he is innocent and blah, 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 blah. I don't know how that's going to go for him. I'm not guessing well. But at this point, backing up the story and just being like, yeah, I'm an asshole who made this up, doesn't look very good. So like I said at the beginning, it just sounds like a swift pile of justice is being served his way. I do not think he'll serve time behind bars for this, because he doesn't have a record of any sort. But he should get a shit ton of community service, and he should get a huge, huge, huge fine. And then he should probably not work for a long time. I'm not saying that he should be canceled and never work again, because I don't believe in cancel culture. But you need to, like, take a time out for several years and think about what you've done. And I just think no one's going to want to hire him for a long time, because it's going to be a PR nightmare. So, just Just justice being served. We will keep you abreast as things come up with his sentencing and whatnot, but justice is being served, you guys. Moving on to our next story where justice is also being served, all right? Josh Duggar is found guilty in his child pornography trial. Former reality TV star Josh Duggar was convicted Thursday of downloading and possessing child sex abuse images on his work computer. A federal jury in Fayetteville, Arkansas, found the 33-year-old Duggar guilty on one count each of receiving and possessing child pornography. He faces up to 20 years in prison and fines of up to $250,000 for each count when he's sentenced. Duggar pleaded not guilty to federal charges of receiving and possessing child pornography in Arkansas in April. Federal prosecutors contended that Duggar downloaded a contraption to his laptop that would circumvent computer software that monitors his internet use. Defense attorneys for Duggar denied the allegations during the trial, saying that someone else downloaded the images and that Duggar's own personal devices were clear of any illicit material. Duggar was featured in the reality TV show on TLC Network with his family called 19 Kids and Counting that ran from 2008 to 2015. The show chronicled the lives of Jim, Bob, and Michelle Duggar and their 19 children, of which Duggar was the eldest, and often centered around the family's religious beliefs as devout Baptists. So some more justice being handed out on a platter, and I am a little shook by this, and I think the whole world is shook by this. I never watched 19 Kids and Counting. You know, after TLC kind of went off the rails, you know, with their weird shows, I really was like, I don't want to see anything on this channel. Like, I used to watch Say Yes to the Dress. I loved it. It was all the rave. Way back in the day, I loved What Not to Wear. Shout out to Stacey London and Clinton Kelly. I still ride so hard for them. Like, those were good shows. And then all of a sudden, TLC started making these weird ass shows, like, about little people and people who have like ridiculous amounts of kids and like people who weigh 1,000 pounds. And it was like, what are we doing? Not that those people's stories like aren't worth telling, but the way they told them was very strange. It was like they were telling the stories in a way so that people would sit at home and be like, oh my God, these people are weirdos. You know what I mean? Like, that's the way they were portraying the shows. I'm not saying those people were weirdos. I'm saying that that's the way I felt like TLC was playing these shows and how they were portraying them, how they were writing them, editing them, forming these types of plots and really like digging into these people's lives. It just came off icky to me. Icky, icky, icky. I never liked it. I stopped. I have not watched anything on that channel in a very long time. 19 Kids and Counting was one of these types of shows. It was weird. Besides the fact that it is my personal opinion, and I might get some hate on this, might get some pushback, it is my personal opinion that it is irresponsible to have 19 children. Literally irresponsible. Like, I do not support this. I do not, cannot get behind it. It is irresponsible. Do not do this, people. I read a book earlier in this year called Hidden Valley Road, and it was about a family that had like 12 kids, and half of the family ended up having serious mental health issues. Like, half of them ended up with severe schizophrenia. A couple of them committed suicide and died. One of them even killed someone else before he killed himself. And it was really a toxic thing, besides the fact that the woman was like not healthy enough to continue to have kids. Like, after her fifth kid, her doctor was like, yeah, you should probably stop having kids now. It's like your body's not doing well with it. And they continued to have kids, and it was so strange. And the children in this book that were not mentally ill, like the healthy like kids in the family, had this really great resentment towards their parents because their parents spent all this time focusing their attention on the sick kids. Like, the kids that were mentally ill got all the attention. So the kids that were healthy like had this really deep-seated resentment towards them. And I'm not saying that the Duggar family is quite like that. I just think that when you have that many kids in one family, it's really hard to give each and every one of them the specific attention that they need to feel loved and seen and nourished and, you know what I mean, go forth in the world. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I'm saying, how can two parents give all of the children, 19 of the children, granted they're all not in the house at the same time, the equal amount of attention and love? Like, I don't think it's possible. I really struggle to see that. And that was obvious from this book I read, this Hidden Valley Road book. And it seems like some of that is happening with the Duggar family, because Josh has had a history of things like this. Like, there was a family member that came out on the stand and said that Josh had confided in him that he had touched and molested several other girls younger when he was younger. He's 33 now, but even in like his early teen year or his late teen years, early 20 years, that he had openly said that he had molested other girls. Like, and so he had done this before. And I don't know. I don't think having 19 kids is responsible. I don't think that it's okay. They put out a statement saying that they were praying for their daughter-in-law. Josh has a wife and 6 kids of his own. So they put out a statement, Jim Bob and the mother, Michelle, that they were praying for her and the children. And as all things, they were leaving it in God's hands, which is really great. I'm a Christian. I trust God above all. But it seems like a cop-out at times. You know what I mean? To say that in this situation where people have been abused, children have been abused, like, this is disgusting. It's a cop-out to just say, like, we're gonna like put this in God's hands. It's like, well, God made you very capable, and I think he wants you to do something here. So maybe you should like move within the spirit and like do something about the fact that he's a predator and that he's been a predator for a long time. I'm getting riled up now. I really don't want to go down a rabbit hole, but I just think this whole thing is suspect and not okay and just brutal. And this guy, I think, has been doing this for a long time. And I am glad that this is the verdict that came down. It needs to be this way. And I think he's going to go to prison for a long time. And I think he needs to, because I think he has a history of this, and it's unfortunate. And there should be no more children who have to be the victims of this predatory behavior. And I just hope it goes away. I hope the rest of the family, the Duggar family, all 18 of them, my goodness gracious, like, I hope they can move on. I hope everyone can move on and live peacefully and happily. Let's move on to some lighter news, shall we? Story number 3, Jeopardy has found their new host for season 38. Oh, crazy that there's 38 seasons. But here it is, season 38 of the long-running trivia show will premiere sometime in 2022 with Mayim Bialik and Ken Jennings at the helm as hosts. Quote, we are delighted to let you know Mayim Bialik and Ken Jennings will continue to share hosting duties through the end of Jeopardy! Season 38, and Michael Davies will remain on as executive producer. This was said by Sony in a statement, quote, we are so pleased to have such an excellent and experienced team in front of and behind the camera as we head into 2022. So Ken Jennings and Mayim Bialik have been sharing the majority of the hosting as they look for, you know, a permanent replacement. Of course, they've had other people step in. Aaron Rodgers famously stepped in. He is busy leading the Packers to another Super Bowl. Yeah, go Pack, go. And I think these are great choices. You know, I don't watch Jeopardy all the time, but when I do, I think Mayim does a great job, you guys. She kills it. Like, I think she should be the permanent host. I know she is hosting a Jeopardy spinoff, which is great to see. I think she just hits every bullet. Like, she is highly educated. She has a great delivery. She also is very famous in and of her own right. I have seen Ken Jennings host a few times, and I didn't love him as a host. I'm not sure, like, his personality didn't come off as much. And granted, you don't want to have too much personality for this type of role, but I really just, Mayim is my pick. Like, I think she kills it. When she hosts, she does a great job. And I hope that they just lock her in and give her the full-time gig, but we will have to see. I think they're just going to keep putting it off, because the last time they kind of picked a host for like a week, it backfired in their face. And so I think that they're just going to put it off and keep just having these two fill in and do the work until they are 100% confident. Because if they have the same situation happen again, where they just shit the bed on hiring a host, like, it's going to look real bad for them. Moving on to our final story of the week, Elon Musk is announced as Time's Person of the Year for 2021. The CEO of Tesla and SpaceX has officially been named Time's Person of the Year. Elon is the wealthiest person in the world and has remained a central figure in news as he and his businesses continue to frame the future of automobiles and space travel. Quote, he is reshaping life on Earth and possibly life off Earth as well. That is a quote by Time editor-in-chief Edward Fassenhall. In 2021 alone, SpaceX made history in September after completing the first mission to space with an all-civilian crew, which included a childhood cancer survivor. Beyond participating in what many are calling the billionaire space race, Musk's SpaceX was chosen by NASA in April to build the next generation lunar lander, beating out 2 other contenders for a $3 billion contract. He also announced that his company, Tesla, would continue to make advancements in technology by developing a humanoid robot with artificial intelligence next year, dubbed the TeslaBot. Musk is the richest person on the planet, according to Forbes, with an estimated net worth of $265.4 billion. Time's Person of the Year title, named by the magazine's editor at the end of each calendar year since its inception in 1927, is not necessarily an award or an honor, but it's representative of the influence of the person or persons had on the news over the previous year. So I saw this announcement and part of me was kind of like, meh, couldn't we have done better? Like, couldn't we have thought outside of the box a little bit on this one, you know? But then I thought about it and I was like, but I can't think of anyone else like who I think would get it besides him. So I kind of went back and forth on it. Like part of me was like, this was the easy choice. Let's dig a little deeper. People, this seems a little obvious, blah, blah, blah. Richest guy in the world, going to space, all this other stuff. That's super duper awesome. And then, like I said, I kind of took a step back and I brainstormed a couple of people, thought about it, you know, had a couple of people that maybe like came to mind, but then I was like, meh, but I don't know that they meet this criteria. Again, I put in the criteria that Time uses, you know, not necessarily the person who's, you know, done XYZ, and it's not necessarily an award, but it's just the person who's had the most influence in the previous year. In which case, I do think that Elon Musk is probably the correct choice or a good choice. At least. I don't know. Maybe I needed to think about it more. Maybe if I thought about it more, I'd come up with someone better. I'm not sure. What do you guys think? I would love to hear what you guys think. If you think Elon is a good choice or if you have some other ideas for people who should be the person of the year, keep in mind that the criteria is someone who's had the most influence in the last year. So keep that in mind. I would love to hear what you think. Go to my Instagram for the show at Candid with Carrie. Leave a comment about who you think should be the Time person of the year. I would love to hear your thoughts. That's going to wrap up our trending topics of the week. Let's move it right along into our interview portion of the show. Today's guest is Kirby Johnson. Kirby is a host, producer, reporter, and podcaster in the beauty space. She currently serves as the co-host of the popular beauty podcast, Gloss Angeles. Before that, she spent 8 years at Pop Sugar, producing over 500 beauty segments in her career and interviewing some of your favorite celebrities like Jennifer Aniston, Viola Davis, Nicole Kidman, Kim Kardashian West, Rihanna, Mariah Carey, Gwyneth Paltrow, and Ariana Grande. Kirby has been featured as a host on Freeform and an expert on The Today Show, The Doctors, and BBC. She's also a regular contributor to publications like Allure, The Hollywood Reporter, Elle, and Glamour. And if that wasn't enough, she just finished writing her first scripted TV series. That's right, you guys. She does it all. I was so eager to talk to Kirby because this was really my first time sitting down and chatting with someone who is in the media world of beauty and wellness. And our conversation did not disappoint. She had so many good insights, both on her career front and how she's navigated her career, but also on the landscape of the beauty and wellness industry as a whole. The landscape of beauty can really be a testament to where we are as a culture. I firmly, firmly believe that. There were so many interesting topics and so many nuggets of wisdom in this episode, and I truly felt like her and I could have kept talking for hours. You are much better off hearing it from her than hearing me talk about it. So, without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Kirby Johnson. Kirby, welcome to the show. How's it going?
It's going great. Thank you so much for having me.
I love the name Kirby. Tell me how you got that name.
Oh, I love this question. So my mom was a big fan of Dynasty in the 80s, like not the reboot, obviously. There was a character, her name was Kirby. She married into the Carrington family and my mom was obsessed with this character. And so when I was born, she named me after Kirby, but she changed the spelling. So my name is not spelled with a Y at the end. It's an IE.
I love people who have like pop, like names from like a pop culture moment. Like I'm hearing a ton of people right now are naming their children Dutton from Yellowstone, presumably, of course. And yep. I love that that kid is like going to have that pop culture moment to go back to.
Totally. I host a podcast called Gloss Angeles. It's a beauty podcast. And my co-host Sarah was named after Sarah Jessica Parker. Like her full name is Sarah Jessica Tan. So, you know, it's like, I feel like if you were in the 80s, there was some type of pop culture influence.
I love that.
Yeah.
So let's start at the beginning where we always start, which is tell us where you grew up and what you were like as a child.
Okay. So I grew up in Georgetown, Texas. So I'm a Texas girl. I was born in Houston, have a ton of family still there. My mom moved to Central Texas when I think I was like maybe three. And Georgetown's a suburb of Austin. It's about 30 minutes north. So a really easy way, you know, to get back and forth to Austin. And so we usually like, so I'm in LA now. And when people ask me where I'm from, I always say Austin, because if I say Georgetown, they're like, DC, like they don't know. But it's a growing suburb. I mean, it's huge now, but, as a kid, I was obsessed with all things Hollywood. Growing up, I wanted to be Julia Roberts. I became obsessed with her. After I saw the movie, My Best Friend's Wedding, my mom let me watch it on VHS and she would record through some of the more adult parts. So there was like a whole scene that happens where I had no idea that scene even existed until I was like in college, because she would fast forward through it. But I fell in love with Julia Roberts and I was like, I want to be an actress and I want to move to Hollywood. So like I have these things that used to go up on the walls in elementary school where you'd be like, my name is Kirby. I have a little brother. I have two dogs. When I grow up, I want to be an actress. When I grow up, I want to move to Hollywood. So like from a very, very young age, I always wanted to be in LA. And one of my family members actually came out to visit me a few months ago. And it was my uncle. He brought some of his friends to dinner. And they were like, oh, how long have you been in LA? Oh, 12 years. And he was like, yeah, we knew from a very young age, she was always going to go to LA. She was going to stay in LA. Even when I moved out here, I remember, you know, when you move to LA, I think when you go back home, the most common question you probably get is, when are you coming back? And I never really saw that as an option. There was never like, you know, okay, I'm going to give it a good 5-year try. It was just like, no, this is my new home. This is where I'm moving. This is where I've always dreamed of living. And I'm really glad I'm here. But yeah, growing up, I loved the idea of being a dreamer and transforming into people. I was very involved in plays and musical theater. You know, I was at Kim and Bye Bye Birdie. I always did the talent shows as Britney Spears. Very invested in like performing. And really, I think it stems from wanting to entertain people and make them smile and make them feel something. I was obsessed with going to concerts too. So when I would go to, you know, a big performance like an NSYNC or Britney Spears, I remember it was just so magical. It was so grandiose. You know, there were fireworks, there was confetti. Like it made you feel like this, there was something bigger out there. And I thought to myself, not necessarily that I wanted to be like on stage performing like NSYNC, but like I wanted people to feel the way that I felt when I would watch these things, or even like a smaller concert that was more intimate and acoustic, like where you really feel you're getting to know the artist and like you're feeling like the deep emotions as they're playing their music. I wanted people to feel that. So then that kind of shifted into me being like, well, maybe I should be a storyteller. Maybe I should, you know, think about what that looks like outside of acting, or outside of performing. And that's when I was like, well, maybe I want to be an on-camera host. And that started my phase of being obsessed with Oprah, still to this day, obsessed with Oprah. I think if you're on camera and you wanted to be a host, you're if Oprah's not one of your top faves in life, it's like, you probably actually don't want to be a host. But, again, she was someone that people that could relate to, but at the same time was telling stories that needed to be told, pushing boundaries, talking about things that a lot of people didn't want to talk about every day on a show at 4 PM. Right. So, I thought, okay, maybe that's where I should kind of focus all my energy. And so when I went to school, I studied at Texas Christian University in Fort Worth, Texas. They have an amazing journalism program. And, so I'm like talking your ear off. You probably didn't even want me to go this far.
Yeah, I do. I want you to go all the places.
Okay. So when I went to school there, and they have an amazing journalism program. It's the Schieffer School of Journalism. I actually made my focus advertising and public relations, because when I graduated from high school, I thought, okay, I definitely want to move to LA after college, but I'm going to need like some kind of skill set outside of performing or being on camera so that I can maybe network or maybe like have something to fall back on. I'm a Capricorn. So I feel like we always have plans. We always are like, okay, if this doesn't work out, we want to have this other route to go. So I studied advertising and public relations within that umbrella of journalism. So we got the like very base level of our education was like, okay, how do you operate as a journalist? Like, what are the ethical codes? Like, learn grammar, learn all of these things. And then once we got into our, like, our junior and senior year, we really started focusing on like advertising and marketing strategies. Like, I remember they had us pick a specific client to kind of advertise for. And I picked the Plastic Surgeons Society of America. That kind of, you know, got me thinking about like how people consume content. And like, this was, by the way, this was like 2008, 2007. This was before social media, really. Like, Twitter was going to just pop up, I think, 2008. Instagram wasn't a thing. We had Facebook, but like, nobody was promoting anything on Facebook outside of like, I went to a party at this, you know, frat house or whatever it was, or here's me with my family. And, it really benefited me to have that advertising and marketing background, especially now when I write a story, I know how to promote it on social media. When I produce a podcast, when I make a video, I know like, okay, this will get people interested at least. So yeah. And then I graduated 2009, moved out to LA 3 weeks later, and I've been here ever since. So that's kind of like me growing up and my aspirations at that point.
Oh my gosh. So when you went to LA, like, what was your, did you think like, I'm going to do, you had these skills, you had your degree, and you're like, I could get a job in PR or marketing and then pursue acting on the side. Was that kind of your goal? Or like, what was your initial goal when you went to LA?
When I went to LA, my goal was for sure being an on-camera host.
Okay.
That was the goal. You know, I like have my own TV show, be able to talk to people. That was it. So, I had actually gotten in touch initially. I had a boyfriend. Okay. I had a boyfriend, as one does, and we had been together for a while, and he lived in Dallas. He was a couple years older than me. So I figured maybe I'll stay in Dallas. And, you know, I was really into beauty. My mom was a cosmetologist growing up, and I fell in love with the Allure magazine. I was known as like the beauty friend. All my girlfriends wanted beauty recs from me growing up. So I thought, okay, maybe I should get into like the beauty space. So when I was a senior in college, to make money, I started working at a spa and helping to manage the spa. And then on top of that, learned how to airbrush tan. It was when airbrush tanning was becoming really popular because Dancing with the Stars was becoming really popular. And so I was like, why don't we bring that to Fort Worth? So I ordered, you know, the kit, the device, learned how to do it. And then I would go to different sorority houses and different places on campus. And I would airbrush tan.
You're a little entrepreneur.
Yes. And my boss was all about it. He was like very, very supportive. And he was like, listen, like, I'll even give you a bigger, you know, a cut of the money if you like book, you know, your own tans. I'm like, great. So I did this, and it was like an art form, because the way you move the gun, like, mm-hmm. I mean, it's not just like, it's not like Ross jumping into the box on Friends and getting sprayed. It's
five
like,
it really,
yeah, yeah, yes. It's very much a art form, having to spray tan a person and then also like making them look natural and like, or like creating abs or whatever. Well, this actually benefited me when I moved to LA, because when I moved out here, my dad and I drove out. And I remember I was like, I need to get a job. And I saw a listing on Craigslist, which, by the way, like, Craigslist has changed so much in the past 12 years. So I may not recommend looking for
Don't
jobs anymore there. Yeah.
Yeah.
But there was a job, and it said, we're looking for an airbrush tanner. You don't need to know how to airbrush tan. We'll teach you, but it's in at a Beverly Hills salon. And I was staying at the time in a hotel, like half a mile away. So I was like, okay, I'm going to send an email and try to meet with them tomorrow while my dad's still in town. And so I did. And they were like, wait, you know how to airbrush tan already? Okay, great. You're hired. So that got me like, you know, a way to start working while I moved out to LA pursuing this dream. And then on top of that, when I was back in Fort Worth, kind of like trying to decide what I wanted to do before I moved to LA, I met with an event planner, because I was the social planner at my sorority. And I had a lot of experience planning like big parties and events. I knew a lot about, like, you know, you have to have insurance and everything that you need to know about vendors and stuff like that. So I'm like, maybe I want to go in the event planning route if I stay here in Texas. And I met with a very popular event planner, Tara Wilson, in Fort Worth. And I talked to her, and she goes, Okay. So I just want you to know, like, as much as you probably prepared for this interview, I did too. And I found your blog and I'm like, oh my God, what is she going to say? Because my blog at the time was called Kirby Needs a Job. And I created it to talk about my dreams and aspirations and what I was thinking and what I was good at and show that I was a good writer. And she's like, you have to move to LA. You have to move to LA. There's really no other option here. She's like, am I happy in my life? Yes. I have a wonderful family, a wonderful job. I'm very successful at it, starting my own business. But I always wished I had moved to New York just to see what would have happened. And I didn't. And I regret it. So I'm reading your blog and you're a great writer. You want to be an on-camera host. You always wanted to move to LA. You absolutely have to move to LA. You can't not. And so she said, I actually have a contact out in LA. Her name is Rachel Hollis. And some people listening may be familiar with her because she's, I mean, admittedly been a part of some major controversies in the past couple of years, but at the time she was a very popular event planner working with Miramax, out in LA. She had an event company called Chic Events. And so Tara knew her and said, hey, through the event planning world, we're friends. She's looking for interns. Let's put y'all in touch. So I had a phone call with Rachel. She was lovely. And she said, I think you're great. I think you should move to LA and come intern with me. And so I had a reason, like that was like a reason to move to LA. Cause at the time I'm thinking to myself, like, yeah, I want to move to LA and become big, you know, TV show host and like have my own production company at some point. But like, I'm 23 years old. I don't know a soul in LA and I don't know what I'm going to be doing with my life. Like I don't have any money to my name. Like, I don't know what to do. I needed like a reason, like a push. And so she said, if you come out here, you can intern with me 3 days a week. So I'm like, okay, this is an unpaid internship, but the experience is going to be useful. I have to get out there. So I moved to LA. I had a friend from high school who I hadn't spoken to in years that just so happened to be moving from Europe back to LA. And she said, like, live with us, live with me and my other roommate. And so she and I shared a room. Like, this is when I talk to people about, like, I get a lot of emails and like DMs, like, I have this dream and I want to make it happen. And I don't know what to do because I don't have everything in place and I don't have like a job or whatever. I'm like, if you're waiting for a job in LA, good luck. Yeah. Like, it's not going to happen. It's not like, if you want it bad enough, you're going to have to just make it work. And so it's like, I was sharing it was a 2-bedroom, 2-bath apartment. I was sharing 1 bedroom with her. It felt like I was back in college again, but we made it work. I did that for a year and then I was able to get my footing and move out and move into my own, you know, have my own room in a different apartment. And when I got to LA, it was a lot of hustling. I met so many people through airbrush tanning at the salon in Beverly Hills. It's no longer there. But I mean, when you're airbrushing a naked person, you make conversation.
Yes,
okay?
You got to.
You have to. And it was actually a really great way for me to exercise my interview skills because you are not only, I mean, for me, I had seen it all anyways. I didn't care. So, but when you go get airbrushed tanned, you're probably nervous.
Yeah.
Somebody's seeing you probably fully nude. And so I knew that by making conversation and taking their mind off of it, it would make them more comfortable. So I had like a whole laundry list of questions that I would always ask. It would get people talking, not thinking about what they're doing. If I'm telling them to, you know, okay, open up your leg so I can get your inner thigh. Like they're not thinking, oh my God, like you can see my labia. You know what I mean? Like there's so many components to it, but it really helped me exercise that muscle. So I always tell people, you never know where you're going to get experience. Like you would never think that you airbrushed tanning someone would help develop that muscle of getting to talk to other people and like getting information out of other people and stories out of other people. And so I did that for a while and just, I hustled. I worked with Rachel Hollis for, I think it was about a year. And then, I got a job at Frederick Fekkai, it's a salon on Melrose Place. It's no longer there. It's actually now my dermatologist's office, which is like a funny full circle moment. But, I met so many people there, that I still work with today, which is crazy. And from, you know, from prolific hairstylists to one of our, you know, front desk associates that like trained me now works for a beauty brand in PR, and he and I go so far back. So, yeah. And after that I had kept, you know, interviewing and trying to get jobs that would kind of lead me into what I wanted to do. Cause I was still auditioning, right? Like I was doing what everybody does, like central casting, figuring out gigs, working on set for 12 hours for like $72 at the time, like just to try to get a SAG card, you know, yeah. doing everything you have to do when you're hustling out here. And, I ended up getting a phone call from a friend and she said, hey, one of my friends, her mom needs someone to run errands for her before Thanksgiving. And, you know, she will pay you handsomely if you can do this. She lives in Sherman Oaks. And I'm like, sure, why not? And so I go and meet this wonderful woman. Her name was Barbara Cowan. And she was lovely. And she gave me her grocery list. I went to Gelson's. I go and I get this, you know, all her food. Well, I find out first and foremost, like her late husband was, Warren Cowan, who started the PR firm Rogers and Cowan. He was Cowan. And she asked me what I wanted to do. And I told her, and she's like, well, you know, this isn't exactly what you want to do, but you do have a background in, you know, PR and marketing. I could maybe see if I can get you a job at Rogers and Cowan. And I'm thinking like, this probably isn't going to pan out. I have zero experience, but like this woman is nice enough to offer. But she's also Sarah Gilbert's mom. And Sarah Gilbert, if y'all aren't familiar,
from Roseanne, you
know, from Roseanne, but yeah. She created The Talk.
Yeah. The Talk. Yep.
And so I was like, oh, this is interesting. Great. So I go back living my life, you know, still working at, the hair salon, and get a phone call from Rogers and Cowan, I think a month later. And they were like, hey, we want to interview you for this office, front office position. And I ended up getting the job there. And what that job taught me, I was there for 15 months. That job helped me network the hell out of my position. I was, you know, responsible for stocking groceries in the kitchen, making sure like the bathrooms weren't a mess, making sure that people's expenses were paid, running errands if necessary. But I was meeting so many people that represented such high profile talent that now when I'm booking my own podcast or writing a story or working with someone, I am connected to them in some way because the publicity world is actually really small.
So small.
So, you know, it's funny because I'll be put in touch with someone like, I'll be put in touch with like Emma Chamberlain, who is like one of the biggest YouTubers.
I love her.
Is a darling. She's a darling. And, you know, she launched a beauty brand. And so, you know, we were pitched by the beauty brand's PR company, like, hey, would you want to have Emma on? And we're like, yes, of course we want to have her on. And then we find out later that her publicist is, Nicole Perez Kruger, who I used to work with when I was at Rogers. And she, to this day, still represents Matthew McConaughey and Lauren Conrad. And that's how we got Lauren Conrad on the podcast. But Nicole told me straight up, she was like, I know you, I know your work ethic. I know that you do a good job. Like, I'm happy to send my clients to be interviewed by you and Sarah because there is that previous relationship. And so I say all this because you just never know who is going to impact your life and how who you meet. Like at the time I was like sorting Nicole's mail, like giving her Lauren Conrad's fan mail. And then later on I'm getting emails from Nicole going, do you want Lauren Conrad on the podcast? She's launching a beauty brand. And it's like, wow, okay, now we feel like we're on the same level, right? Like we're working together instead of me, you know, essentially being like an assistant, you know, at the office. And the other part of the story is too, my boss, Mark Glover, he was the head of office services, this crazy British man, just like out of control, nuts. Like we did not get along when we first met, but then to this day, like I love him dearly. He always told me, you get your job done and you don't F around and you can do whatever you want. You can write your blog. You can go on auditions. If you are wanting to even try to get a different job that could help you in the long run, like just let me know. Don't hide anything from me. and we'll be good. And so, you know, I had people like him really looking out for me and knowing, because I put it all on the table when we interviewed. He was like, okay, so you surely don't want to be an office assistant for your whole life. So what do you want to do? And I told him, I want to be a TV host. I want to be on camera. And he said, okay. And so he had that information so that he could help me. Now, do I think there are plenty of people out there that you kind of have to hold your cards, you know, in tight, because they will not want to help you. They'll want to suppress you. They wouldn't want to see you flourish and shine. Of course. So you have to also be like a good reader of people. You have to have good, you know, judgment of character. But in this case, he is a good guy and he knew he wanted to help me. And I knew that. And at that job, I had so many people that wanted to help me, different agents that I would talk to, different publicists offering me, ways to get my name out there. You know, having me work the Grammy Awards, having me work Elton John's Oscar party, just different ways to kind of get me more acclimated into this entertainment world that I was so new to. Yeah, I was there for 15 months. And then I auditioned for a company called Pop Sugar. They were looking for an on-camera beauty host that had a journalism background. And I was like, okay, I feel like this.
Pop Sugar is huge now. Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. So at the time it was 2011 and I just kind of like marched in there and did my audition. I watched it the other day. I'm like, oh my God, I was such a baby. But I had nothing to compare to. Like I was just doing auditions and I went through a ton of, you know, auditions and then eventually got it. So I was there for 8 years. I helped grow their digital beauty video vertical. So, you know, initially when we got started, I was making enough videos that 3 videos a day were going out. It was insane. I felt like I was just like writing and working nonstop. And at the time, videos were only going live on our website and YouTube. There wasn't like Facebook video or TikTok didn't exist, any of that. And then as I had been there, you know, for 4 or 5 years, then Facebook started rolling out video. And we learned really quickly how people consume videos, A, mobily, but B, just on digital apps, because it's so different than sitting in front of YouTube and watching like a 20-minute video. Like you have to be able to catch their attention in 3 seconds. They're probably viewing it vertically, not horizontally. And you know, people tap out after a certain amount of time, unless the content's really, really good. So, I learned so much about how people consume video content, which has also helped inform like how I write the podcast or how I edit the podcast, how, when I go to interview someone, like what people are going to stay tuned for, and what they're going to tap out on. So yeah, I was there for 8 years and as the face of the beauty vertical. And then I left in 2019. I announced I was leaving on a Friday. That Tuesday, I launched Los Angeles with Sarah, and we've been doing that now a little over 2 years. And I left because I wanted to focus A, more on myself. Like when you work for a company like that, yes, you get the perks of having a salary, a talent contract, health benefits. People naturally are inclined to want to work with you because you're under this umbrella of like a bigger name. But I didn't feel like I was growing. And I also felt like I needed to branch out on my own so that I wasn't Kirby from Pop Sugar, that I was just Kirby Johnson. Mm-hmm. And, also I was like, I need time to like, write, like I want to write television series and sell them. I want to write a movie and sell it. And you can't do that when you're working full time for somebody else. So, some people may think I'm crazy for doing that, but remember it was 2019. So the pandemic hadn't hit yet. And trust me, when COVID happened, I was like, did I make the wrong decision? Like it would be really great to be, you know, sitting pretty with my salary, with health benefits, like in the midst of a pandemic. For a lot of people, the pandemic, mental health wise, was horrible. I mean, it was the worst mental health I ever had. And thankfully, I have my health out of it. So I'm eternally grateful for that. But one of my friends, when I was kind of, you know, confiding in her how I was actually feeling. She was like, well, first of all, you're not alone. So like, don't feel like you're alone in this dark mental health space. But at the same time, you know, if you hadn't have left your full-time job when you did, you would be just starting now in the pandemic. Like you already have a year behind you. And the way she framed it really helped me to see like the silver lining in that. Like, okay, I did leave at the right time. I have built so much in the year that I left. I mean, we got Selena Gomez on the podcast, like in the pandemic, which I mean, I don't know, like probably wouldn't have happened because if I hadn't left in 2019, I wouldn't have started the podcast in 2019 and it wouldn't have been established by that point.
I love that. What made you want to, like, what made you be like, we're going to start a podcast? You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of different things you probably could have shifted to. You probably could have been like, I'm going to start my own YouTube channel and make that my thing, or I'm going to do X, Y, Z. But you really went all in with the podcast and it's wildly successful. Why was it podcasting that you had to do?
So we just felt like the industry at the time, like podcasts were starting to grow. And while when we started ours, there were so many podcasts and like, there's so many more to come. Like it was still relatively early on. Like there were definitely beauty podcasts, but, we felt like we had something different to offer. We were two beauty editors, you know, of different backgrounds. You know, Sarah is Filipino Chinese, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong, Sarah, and you're listening to this, but definitely Filipino. I'm, you know, Caucasian white chick. So we have very different perspectives and different backgrounds. But we come together in that, like, we're work wives, best friends, and we see what is happening in the beauty industry and know like, oh, okay, the reason why this is being marketed this way is because of this. And actually that's unregulated. And so we thought, okay, we have a really different perspective on this. Like we can kind of pull back the curtain, you know, but also be from different backgrounds and share those nuances as well. And then B, we were just texting each other, emailing each other, DMing each other all the time. Like, what is this? Oh my gosh, did you see this? Ooh, so-and-so is launching something. Like maybe we could break this news, but we didn't have any way to do that. And so we thought, okay, why don't we just turn all of these communication efforts into a podcast?
Yeah, we're already doing it.
Yeah, we're already doing it. And then so she's a journalist. She worked initially in entertainment news, like covering like teen pop stars like Justin Bieber and Selena Gomez, like a lot of fun stuff, like the Jonas Brothers. And then she got into beauty and fashion and she worked at Bustle when I was at Pop Sugar. And so that's how we met, because we would be at events together, press trips together. And then when I left, you know, my background obviously is journalism. I know how to write. I love to write, but I also have a producing background. So I know how to cut and edit and all of these other things. And I was like, okay, you know,
marketing.
Yeah, let's do this. So we both have these backgrounds that kind of complement each other in a way. And then we both have like this editorial discretion too. Like the thing about the beauty industry is like, it's one of the most diverse industries that you can be in. And we have a long way to go, but I feel like it's also one of the only industries that really focuses on inclusivity. Like whether or not people are actually walking the walk, people will be called out if they're not, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like, for instance, when brands were launching like all of these foundation shades, and then there was like only three for people of color, you know, the beauty industry is like, what the hell? Like, this is wrong. This isn't right. And it started to shift the conversation about like, okay, what actually is racism or unconscious bias? Like, is it like being like, you know, blatantly racist, or is it things like just not including entire communities of people?
Yeah.
And so, you know, Sarah and I, like, if we're making a list or we're talking about something or we see something newsworthy, we're like, okay, is this brand known to have racist tendencies? Or like, do we know on the low that the founder's racist because we've had firsthand experience hearing, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like we are very informed in that way. Of course we can't and don't know everything, but we at least are trying our best. And I feel like, you know, having Sarah as like my work wife in this, my co-host, but more importantly, my work wife in it, like we work together to try to make beauty not only fun and accessible, but like actually educate people on like, what are you purchasing? How are your dollars influencing something bigger at hand? I mean, sometimes just buying an eyeliner is buying an eyeliner, right? But like, if you can buy an eyeliner that supports a community of people with a disability, why not? Like, let's uplift those brands too. So anyways, I digress. But yeah, we started the podcast just because we were like, we have a lot to say and we have nowhere to say it. So let's just do it.
Did you guys have a vision of making it a business or making it part of your careers from the get-go? Or were you just kind of like, we're going to have fun and see where this goes? Like, what was the vision when you first started out?
I mean, I think we both knew we wanted it to be something, but we didn't know how it was going to work out. We were like, we could announce this and nobody could care, but we had, you know, a lot of fanfare when we did announce it. People were like, yes, can't wait for this. I feel like we've accrued like legit fans now, which is awesome. But at the time, I think when we launched, it was really like insidery. Like it was a lot of publicists and brands and people that work in the beauty industry, beauty editors, makeup artists that were listening. And so if you listen to some of our earlier episodes, like I feel like it feels a little bit more casual because we feel like we're just talking to people we know. And then we, you know, developed a social following and we had people find us, you know, through Spotify and Apple Podcasts or like articles that have been written about us. And we're like, oh, actually we have like people that we don't know listening to this podcast. And so now that's just transformed into, you know, we're coming out with merch and we want the website to be, you know, more of an editorial website where people can go and like, not just listen to our episodes and see the products we're talking about, but like actually like learn something there too. You know, we want this to be, we like want to throw like a big event. My dream would be to literally get in touch with like LA Tourism Board and have us do a Los Angeles bus tour where we hit like all the hot beauty spots and people walk away with like a gift bag or like a blowout or something, like go to LA beauty institutions and do that. So we're definitely thinking of it on a larger scale and it's a priority for both of us, but at the same time, it's like also not our full-time job. Like right now it's still like our hobby. We do it twice a week. And it definitely doesn't feel like a hobby. We put a lot of time into it, but yeah, we definitely see like a bigger vision for the podcast in the future.
As you should. I mean, that you definitely should. I would love to hear if you could give your younger self some advice, maybe like before you got to LA or maybe when you first got there, or I don't know, if you could just go back to 18, 20-year-old Kirby, what would you tell her?
Be confident. I'm still insecure, but I was so insecure. And I look back at that girl. I'm like, oh my God, why were you insecure? You had a great personality. You were fun. You were cute. Like, be bold. Don't be afraid because you're scared that someone's going to think that you're not smart or that you're dumb or that like you're unqualified. Just do it. Put your best foot forward and do it. Don't be so insecure or scared. I think people don't take leaps of faith because they are so in their head about like everything that could go wrong and everything that they're not, that then they miss out on like really awesome, cool moments of like serendipitous moments almost because they're so in their head about it. Yeah. So I feel like, 18, 20-year-old Kirby. I mean, she was brave though. I'll give her that because like she moved to a completely different state, to a city she'd been maybe one time when she was in third grade, like didn't know a soul out here and was kind of just like, I have to be here. Like my heart is calling me to be here. I can't not do this. Left behind my family who I'm super close with, left behind all my friends and, you know, took that leap of faith. But when I got out here, I was insecure. And when you get to LA, it's really easy to be insecure because there's always going to be someone that's taller or better looking than you or funnier than you or smarter than you. And you kind of, especially when you go on auditions, you're like, damn, okay, every single person in here, we all look alike.
Yeah,
we all look alike. I'm not special actually, because we all look alike, you know? So I would tell her just to be bold and like, wear the bikini. Stop being insecure about your body. It's just so dumb. So dumb. When I look back on it, I'm like, girl, just do it. But yeah, be bold.
How has your vision and your goals changed? I mean, you know, you said you wanted to be Oprah. You know, do you still want to be Oprah? You mentioned, you know, developing yes. a TV show or a movie. Like, how has it evolved for you? And what does that picture look like in your head now?
I think the thing I love about Oprah is that she's a multi-hyphenate, right? So like she was doing the Oprah show and then I think her first movie was The Color Purple and she got into acting and she was a really good actress.
Yes. Phenomenal.
And, you know, and then she launched Oprah Magazine and then she became like a lifestyle influencer of sorts, right? Like before it was even a term. And
a philanthropist.
She's a philanthropist. She has own network. She creates series. I love that she has her hand in everything. She wasn't stuck in a box. It wasn't like, okay, you do daytime TV and that's what you do. Okay. Like, no, she has Super Soul Sunday where she's talking to like prolific thought leaders about like important things and things that are good for, you know, your psyche. She's still doing, you know, celebrity interviews. She's, you know, helping her girls, as she calls them, with their schooling and like getting them all set. Like, I like that she isn't in a box. She's no longer put in that box. And so that's why I find her so inspirational. And for me, do I want to have a TV show like Oprah? Yes, 100%. I want to tell people stories. I want people to feel good. I want to entertain. But then like, I want to have Los Angeles and I want to be able to provide, you know, interesting beauty stories for people to read and curate lists of some of our products or new products that haven't, you know, launched yet so that people can like find out what's new and hot. I have my series. I want to sell it. I want to start to learn that process and learn what it's like to, you know, be a producer or co-creator on set and get that experience. That's an experience I don't have yet. And I look forward to the day that that happens and then see what happens from there. The sky's the limit for everyone. And I think like one thing that we all have to remember is just because something is happening for someone else doesn't mean it can't happen for you. I think like a lot of times, especially with women, is we think, oh, well, so-and-so is getting this. My opportunity is shot. I had that same idea, but I'm not going to be able to achieve it now. No, that's not how it works. Just because someone else achieves something doesn't mean it's taken away from the rest of us. It means you just keep working. If it's happening for her, great. It means it can also happen for more women too. So yeah, my vision is still TV. I know everyone loves digital. Everyone loves the internet. And yes, the internet is like a really great way to connect with people. And I think that you have to make content now that either people want to talk about on the internet or can be clipped out for the internet. TV has always been number one for me. I've always thought it, you know, it's been the gold standard for me. And that's my ultimate dream. But I also think like when you are making your TV stuff, anybody out there who's a creator, think about how it may bring a community together or what it's going to look like, you know, clipping out a segment from that show and how it will perform online.
You know, in terms of the media aspect of things, what would be your advice to someone who looks at your career and really admires what you do, whether it be your podcast or just your hosting work you've done with Pop Sugar? What would be your advice to someone who's just starting out?
Just do it. If you, a common question I get is like, I feel like I need a reel to get any auditions, but I don't have a reel. Make a reel. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have legit work. Go stand in front of a park and report on, you know, what's going on with the dogs in the dog park. Go to a nail salon and take video of someone doing your nails and, you know, report on like a trend that you have been seeing that you think is going to be big for 2022. People are, the point of a reel is so that people can know your personality, know that you can talk on camera and kind of get a sense of like what your beat is. It doesn't have to be, you know, a clip from the Today Show and then your interview with Machine Gun Kelly. It needs to just kind of display your personality. So make it yourself. Start a YouTube channel. If you want to be an on-camera host, you should be producing content on camera at least 3 times a week. It is a hard job having to create and talk in front of a camera and then edit it and then post it. But you need to be able to say, if you meet someone and they ask you what you want to do with your life and you say, I want to be a host, a TV host. And they say, oh, do you have anything I can see? You can pull up your Instagram or your YouTube and say, yeah, here's my link. Check it out. And see, and I would love your feedback. Or go to my website. I first and foremost make a website. That was the first thing I did in college. So glad that I secured that name when I did. So put your reel on there, put any clips of you on camera there, put your resume, a bio so people get to know you, include any links to anything maybe you've written. Writing is a really great way to get into media. Like, not everyone is going to come out and be able to get on camera right out the gate. So if you are passionate about writing about pop culture or music, or, you want to just learn more about the industry, look for jobs at places like Variety, The Hollywood Reporter, Deadline. So you can really like start to learn more about, you know, who represents who and what studios are doing what beats do certain writers cover. And then from there, you never know, like that could evolve into on-camera hosting for that particular publisher that could lead you to somewhere else where you're hosting, you know, in arena at the Kings games, or you never know where it's going to lead. So definitely have a website, definitely just start doing it and put yourself out there. You never know where it's going to lead. Oh, and just like tell people what you want to do. You can't be meek. You can't be like, well, I was kind of hoping I wanted to, you know, at one point in my life be a host, but like, I don't have any experience. Never say that. If someone asks you, what are you and, you know, what do you do with your life? Say, I want to be an on-camera host. I love storytelling, or I love writing, or I love producing. Here, you know, and then that way people are like, they're thinking about you when you're writing, when they're looking for someone that does what you do.
Yeah. Don't be shy about it. Like literally claim it and be like, this is what I do, or this is what I'm going to do, or this is what I'm currently doing. And just be like, literally put a stake in the ground and be like, this is what I do. Remember me.
100%. It's like with acting. I remember I would meet actors and they're like, I'm an actor, but I haven't been in anything big. I'm like, stop saying that. Stop saying that. You are an actor because you are constantly going on auditions. Like this is a part of your job as an actor. You are going to classes, you're going on auditions, you're learning, you're memorizing scripts, you're reading scripts, you're going to the Groundlings and all these other things. Like you, even though you're not on the big screen right now, everything that you're doing, that's what is required of an actor. So say that. Yeah, you are acting. You're acting. So proclaim it and put the stake in the ground, as Carrie says.
I love it. All right, Kirby, tell everyone where they can find you and all the places you want to be found.
Okay. I'm Kirby Johnson on all platforms. So K-I-R-B-I-E on Twitter, Instagram. I'm also on Facebook, Kirby Johnson TV. You can find me on my website, kirbyjohnson.com. You can see my very old reel from 2014. So I'm updating that as we speak. And then Los Angeles, everywhere you get your podcasts, we call ourselves an edutainment beauty podcast. If you want to know what's going on in the world of beauty, news, headlines, honest takes. And then we have amazing interviews. We had Mario Dedivanovic, who is Makeup by Mario, Kim Kardashian's makeup artist, on recently. We've had Selena Gomez, Lauren Conrad, Barbie Ferreira, Lana Kandor. We've had Jonathan Van Ness. We've had so many amazing guests on the podcast. So it comes out twice a week and it's Los Angeles, like lip Los Angeles. And you can find us at Los Angeles Pod on Instagram and Twitter. We have a Facebook group you can join if you just want beauty recommendations from like-minded people in the beauty world. Just search our page and join the group, Los Angeles. And yeah, we have a website too. If you go to losangelespod.com, you can find all of our episodes plus links to every product that we mention in the pod. And that's us.
Yay. Thank you so much, Kirby. I loved hearing your story.
Thank you so much for having me, Carrie. Thanks for doing this podcast.
That was host, producer, reporter, and podcaster Kirby Johnson. For more information on Kirby and all of the past guests we've had here on Candid with Carrie, head to carriegillespie.com/podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and are enjoying the show in general, it would mean the world to me if you took a screenshot of this episode and put it on your Instagram stories. Make sure you tag me and tag the show. I am at Instagram at carrie.gillespie and the show is at Candid with Carrie. It would also mean the world to me if you went to Apple Podcasts and left the show a 5-star rating and wrote a review. It literally takes 2 seconds, you guys. I swear to God, 2 seconds. Just click 5 stars, say what you like about the show, and it would make my day, month, year, all the things. I read them all, and I always smile from ear to ear. It also just helps the show grow. So if you are enjoying it and want us to continue to get amazing guests on the show, the way you can do that is by submitting a review. Thank you so much, you guys, for tuning in this week. It means the world to me that you come hang out with me in this little space on the interwebs. It is not lost upon me that your time is valuable, and I appreciate it so very much. I'll be back with another episode next week. In the meantime, make good choices and be kind to others. Bye, guys.